Horses with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Gulfstream Park, a very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And the activities here picking up the race day, of course, and it's Florida Derby week. It'll all build up to Saturday's action and starting to dig in and get familiar with these 14 races here, and of course at Oaklawn as well. And for Oaklawn, by the way, speaking of which, an unusual 13 race card. That's a fairly as this door next to me gets open, as you can hear. You haven't heard that this week yet. The always irksome leaf blowers. Between Gulfstream and Oaklawn Saturday. at least you don't have to be up for the Dubai action, folding that in. But 13 races at Hot Springs, 14 at Hallandale, so 27 races to wade through, and that's just the two venues. It's not as if those are the only places where there's going to be racing on Saturday, right? Plenty to discuss and dig through. It's a busy morning. Actually, we got a little bit of a time opening. Seth Merrow is actually en route this morning to South Florida, and if you, I can't remember if we talked about it on air or not. I think we talked about it on TV on on the weekend show, Racing Across America, but a rare preview show appearance by me, which we don't get to do too often. I think I've done a couple with Quigley at Santa Anita, and Pete and I did a couple at Saratoga, but I will be sitting in with Seth for the Florida Derby Day Capital OTB preview show, or whatever, paddock gathering. I don't know where we're doing it, or I don't know anything except to show up and be prepared to discuss the 14 races with you, all right, with Seth. And I'm looking forward to it, actually. Haven't decided what to wear. I'll put some effort into that. Guaranteed. I think Seth will be here in person tomorrow or Friday, and we'll do maybe a little preview as well. Morning line should be out today too, right? There is morning line activity from Churchill for the last Derby future wager pool, pool six, and I printed it out, and predictably, of course, I mean, you know, Forte, 5-2, that's not what you're interested in here. You're looking for horses that are going to, between now and then, most notably the Bluegrass, Wood, Santa Anita Derby horses are the ones I think you're going to key in on, and the ones that, you know, will not have had a referendum. I think that's what you want to do. So go through it. Blazing Sevens. Who expected, right? What was the storyline going into his seasonal debut? Well, it's not like Chad to have the horse ready to fire first time. Right. He's going to try to have him ready to fire next week. He's 50-1. He's 50-1, morning line. So what happens if Blazing Sevens, let's say he ends up, I don't know, let's say he ends up 38-1 on Sunday night. And then he goes out and has a bang up bluegrass performance. What is he in Derby? Fourth choice, third choice, right? That to me is what you're after here. Interestingly, the Japanese contenders that are on here. I should, I don't have time right this far off the break here. Probably should bring in KK. We've been discussing it. We've been discussing these all year. The Japanese, starting with Derma Sotagaki, we'll talk to Dick Powell shortly. And I want to recap from Dick the Dubai action. Been saving that, but Derma Sotagaki is 40-1. Be very interesting to see where that number goes. Mandarin Hero that I brought up yesterday. Mandarin Hero 80-1. What happens if he runs a big Santa Anita Derby and makes his way to Kentucky? Right? He'll be, it depends on what he does, obviously, at Santa Anita. Speaking of the other Santa Anita Derby runners, Skinner. I would keep a very close eye on Skinner. 30-1, Battaglia, a little clever by Battaglia to make Skinner 30-1. I was a little disappointed, actually. I was hoping that that Battaglia would let him go a little higher. To me, Skinner, obviously practical move, but practical move is 8-1 going into the Santa Anita Derby. Skinner and Go Rocket Ride. Go Rocket Ride is 20-1. Your San Felipe runner-up, but Skinner, who was giving away a lot of experience, and who you heard San Felipe week, you heard directly from John Sheriffs, what he was looking for, and Skinner was the horse that rallied the best in that San Felipe, and he'll be that much better, I think, next Saturday in the Santa Anita. How about the crazy? I'm not a morning line basher. Two fills, he made 40-1, and if you get 40-1 on two fills Sunday night, I think you want a piece, right? Yeah. What else in this group? Looking at kind of juxtaposing it with my list of runners that are scheduled for next week. Those are just that let me just plant that seed. All right, the ones obviously that run Saturday, Arkansas and here, that'll decide for themselves. The all others, 15-1 for all others, which, at this point, aren't we? I mean, there is, but the thing is, anybody that jumps up now, and I'm trying to think if there's any value in the all others, but I don't think there is. It's hard to say if there might be. Maybe. All right. Well, we'll know more when we know more. A couple of other pieces of news. I want to slip this in before I get sidetracked, because let me tell you what's going on today. Dick Powell has mentioned, and of course Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. But then we did confirm and lock in visits with Ron Fauché and Ray Lou Gutierrez, not just because they won the training and riding titles at Fairgrounds. So we will talk to both of them. And Jerry O'Dwyer, the conquering hero, returned to American soil off of Sebelius' terrific Golden Shaheen win. It's funny how the Golden Shaheen, I don't have the list in front of me, but I think of Carl O'Callaghan, right? is Carlo Callahan, one of the great videos on in racing history. O'Callaghan running up and down the stretch when Kinsale King, I think. When he won the Golden Shaheen, it's very cool how the Golden Shaheen has the, you know, the potential for this kind of winner that, you know, is not in the mainstream. And that sprinter, you know, that's the sprint category in general, right? In fact, here, let me just a quick glance. Let's see who else that fits that. Caller One, but you know, Caller One's a good example, isn't he? Yeah, right. Jim Chapman, Proud Tower Two. Well, how about that? And Kelly's Landing, Benny the Bull. Yeah, it really does. It does. Yeah, Mind Your Biscuits with the pair. Yeah. So, yeah, you get the you know, the smaller outfit, just a pure sprint star scenario that is authored here by Jerry O'Dwyer, and you know, doing it with Ryan Moore has got to be pretty cool. So we're going to talk to Jerry today as well. All right, Dick Powell, Ray Lou Gutierrez, Sid Fernando, Ron Fauché, Jerry O'Dwyer, and Alan Foreman. Alan in Florida, he's at the Foreman compound between Boynton Beach and Palm Beach. West Palm, I think. So we will talk to we will talk to Alan and get some of the hatful of HISA hijinks cleared. All right. And speaking of which, I'm sure with Alan, I'm sure I'll discuss the very strange letter that Anthony Manganiello wrote and. You know, somehow the trade journals figured it was very important to plaster it all over the internet. As disqualifying a opening paragraph as, you know, if you're going to criticize National HBPA for the stance and for the pursuing of, you know, the legal challenge of HISA, okay, that's fine. You know, reasonable people can have disagreements. To say what he said, to basically introduce his attack, is completely bizarre. Where he says, all I hear these days from the National HBPA is how bad the Federal Horse Racing Integrity Safety Act is for thoroughbred racing. No, that's they didn't. No, at no point has it been said that it's bad for horse racing. And then the second line, the National HBA says there is no need for uniform track safety and no need for national medication rules. Anybody that sees this, you can stop reading after that line, because it's completely the opposite. It's unbelievable that nobody read this and said, gee, Mr. Manganiello, the HBPA has said repeatedly, we completely are in line with the concept of uniform track safety and need for nationwide medication rules, and have advocated for both for years. So for him to write this, basically the whole thing can just, you can just throw out the rest of it, because it's a complete misrepresentation of what HBPA is doing. And this thing was embarrassing. I'm sorry. I promised myself I wouldn't take that tack, but this was just ridiculous. Preposterous. In South Carolina, I'm into the bit today. I did get to sleep like at 8 p.m. and slept till 5:45. So I'm fresh, fit and ready, as they say in American Turf Monthly. I got this from our friend Richard Sesternino. And apparently in South Carolina, I have not seen any publicity of this. Apparently, emails went out to, I'm not sure how they, where they put the list together for emails, want to legally wager on upcoming horse races like the Kentucky Derby. Pending legislation in the South Carolina State House would legalize advance deposit wagering so that South Carolinians can enjoy new entertainment opportunities while also supporting rural jobs and South Carolina's equine agribusiness community without raising taxes. So apparently, there. And again, I hadn't seen this anywhere. So thanks to Richard for sending. We know Richard from Saratoga. Call Senator Campson, 803-212, and ideally be a South Carolinian, 803-212-6340. Senator Campson's office, 803-212-6340. Let him know you support the South Carolina Equine Advancement Act today. Very cool. And, one aspect of... public consumption of the sport and wagering is, we've got what, 12 jurisdictions, 12 states that, could pass ADW laws and let their citizens responsibly make a decision whether they want to bet or not. I mean, come on. Yeah, and South Carolina certainly, I would imagine, retirees and people that have relocated to South Carolina. So we'll find out more about this, and I find out what the timing is. But good luck. And of course, Georgia, they've tried to, the Georgia initiative has been maddening, no doubt about that. Let me get to Dick because. We're going to end up in trouble here because I've got so much to do, and I've already gone far afield. Doesn't take much, as you know. but I'm looking forward to talking to Dick about Dubai. I actually, I was just kind of watching with one eye. I really did not pay much attention until it got to the, the key portion of the race day. Undoubtedly, Dick took it all in. Dick Powell, good morning.
Steve, do you remember in after World War II, there were soldiers found in the remote islands in the Pacific?
Sure, sure.
They were still fighting for Japan because obviously they didn't get the news that the war was over. Well, I guess some of these people that write letters to the editor don't realize, hey, you won.
Yep. You got that right.
Nothing worse than a sore loser than a sore winner.
It's very, very strange. And like I said, if you wanted to have a reasonable, if you want to criticize the legal challenge and say, it's not necessary at this point to wonder about the constitutionality, I guess you could do that. But to basically say, I really haven't been paying attention to anything the HBPA has said, and I haven't read anything they've written. That's what those first two lines say, because nothing, there's nothing about the HBPA position that is to quote unquote against uniform track safety and a need for nationwide medication rules. To me it was just a disqualifying opening statement.
Yes, but as we know, things will only change when they change.
All right, let me. Let's get on the beam. first of all, you've got you got to give everybody your take on speaking of Japan. You know, another fabulous showing when it came to World Cup night, and virtually at every level in every division. And I'm going to let Sid, you know, talk about it a little bit from a breeding standpoint. But some thoughts about what we saw.
It was just, I mean, you knew they were going to be. They sent 27 horses, so you knew they were going to be strong, and they were in almost every division, short, long, dirt, turf. What it's always struck me over the years, even when they were getting beat, was the gameness that they have as a culture. They will try anything. So now, when you're showing up with numbers and quality, well, they're going to do real well. They won 3-4 in the UAE Derby. Very impressive to win it. Now, the winner got an easy lead, and who knows if you'll be ever able to do that again against better company. But then you go into the other races, and if it's not one horse, it's another horse. You know, it's like the easy thing is to say, oh, I'm going to go with the Japanese horse. Okay, which one? There were how many in the World Cup? 7, 8. I mean, they had the World Cup surrounded. And the winner had some logic to it. And luckily, I was on with Seth Saturday morning, and I did talk up Emblem Road, who won the Saudi Cup last year and ran poorly in this year's edition when he just fell out of the gate, and yet he was only beaten 4 lengths. So I'm thinking, you know, a second start, you know, stretching out in the distance. He had a decent prep for it. So he comes flying along to get second, paid $16 to place, which is fantastic for me. And then the winner, Ushba Tesoro, went off at 14-1. Algiers did look like a winner, turning for home. It's a weird track that when you look at the races and you see someone drew wide on the dirt, it's not always the kiss of death, because there was a severe kickback on that racetrack and it affects horses. And a lot of the riders don't mind going outside to get away from it. So in the sprint race that you mentioned, Sebelius comes up the inside but had nobody in front of him. So amazingly, he's down on the inside, but he's not getting any real kickback in his face. And Gunite and Hopkins were battling, looked like they were going to run 1-2. Here comes Sebelius on the inside. Here comes the 9-year-old Switzerland on the outside. They hit the line together. Sebelius with Ryan Moore, and Ryan doesn't lose many of these photos. And he wins again. Ryan won the photo in the 2-mile race, the Dubai Gold Cup, with Broom, who, you know, I've never been a big fan of Broom. I always thought he was like a cut below, but at these marathon distances, he's probably going to have a big season, because he has the Ascot Gold Cup. Aiden even mentioned Melbourne Cup for him. So going to 2.25 miles, yeah, Broom can do it, and especially with Ryan Moore in the iron. So it was a sensational day for Japan, but it was just fantastic world horse racing. You had Americans win, Japanese, local horses win. Equinox might have been the star of the day. He was just awesome on the lead. And everything I heard when he got over there was he was awesome. And he lived up to it. Westover was a real good second, because Westover melted down before the race. So Equinox just did everything right. Westover got up for second. Rebel's Romance, the Breeders' Cup turf winner, was far back. Hard to make up ground on that course. Once they get into that kind of gallop, it's not a real closes type racetrack. So Equinox, very, very good. But the Japanese, I didn't get a chance to figure it out. But like in the World Cup, they ran 1 four, five. A UAE Derby, 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, they took home quite a bit of prize money back to Japan, and then they'll regroup and they'll be back for other big races. So it's just that courage to go out and run the risk of looking bad, which has happened. But you learn from it, you get better at it, and the staffs now, when they show up, and the other thing I heard, Steve, let's say a trainer sends six horses over. He's sending six stable people. Even if Dubai doesn't pay for it, they're going to pay for it. So in other words, if you're sending out six horses to the track in the morning, you have six riders. You're not sending out two. Horse comes back, rider gets off, tacks up the other one, takes that one out. I mean, they basically have taken that out of the equation when they travel. So it's less stressful on the horses, and the horses, they worked early in the morning and just did everything right. So as a group, they were just sensational, and then individually, it'll be interesting to see where the international ratings put Equinox as far as turf horses, because he's probably going to leap to the front.
Well, there's going to be plenty to evaluate, and I'm going to let Sid do some pedigree portions. Like on this Derma Sotagaki, for instance, you look at this pedigree, and obviously the mare, Sunday Silence line, third dam, April Sonnet, daughter of Dyke, and so from the third dam back, it's all U.S. and a son of Mind Your Biscuits. I mean, you do wonder, you know, how. I mean, this is the Preakness distance and all. It's kind of interesting. I mean, it feels like speed, you know, speed on top and stamina on the bottom, kind of a classic scenario. But I'm anxious for Sid to kind of walk us through, you know, what has been, you know, instrumental. It all starts with Sunday Silence over there.
Yes. Now, they were... What Sunday Silence did was he accelerated a process that had already been going on. Just his presence and his genetic matchup with many mares that had northern taste in their pedigree. Northern taste was the dominant sire in Japan for the years. He was, I believe he was a chestnut, but what was striking about him is he had a blonde mane, and he just dominated Japanese breeding for years and years, and then you bring in Sunday Silence, so you get that cross with Al Mahmood, and that kind of just lit a fire. And now it's just continued through the sons and daughters and everything else, so it's just exploded. But they also have a very different way of bringing horses to the races. The horse gets broken and raised and trained where they're from, so Northern Farm breaks their own horses, trains them up to the races. You know, just there's no, we're going to send them over to here and then bring them back for there and stuff. And they have a big, big percentage of horses that get to the races. And so their process works, and then their ability to ship and handle that stress, just, I don't see a change. I would think there'd be even more races that they might try to pick off, besides the Middle East, because the Middle East has big money dirt races and a couple of big money turf races. But even then, during the summer, I would love to see Equinox go to Ascot for the Gold Cup or various races like that. But at the same time, we have to recognize Japan has big, big races. And if an owner says, no, I'm staying home for the Arima Kinnan or something like that, it makes perfect sense. But they were spectacular, and I've touted the whole program before, and so no surprise on Saturday other than having the right Japanese horse.
Exactly. In fact, Marcus, I'm looking forward to talking to Marcus probably Friday, and I mean, we'll be focused on the weekend, but I he made that point when we talked to him Friday morning from when we did the preview from Dubai, as he was watching a schoolboy cricket match, apparently. that was right in front of him. He's going to have to explain that at the very least when we talk to him. So, and Sid will be with us too next hour to talk a little pedigree, because you know even the classic winner, the World Cup winner, that Ushba Tesoro, Orfevre, and King Kamehameha, sire and the broodmare sire, and you know King Kamehameha, King Mambo, and Orfevre, Stay Gold, son of Sunday Silence. I mean, it's you know just a fascinating portion, and there is of this whole discussion. One thing that's interesting, just coincidentally, and I want Sid to discuss it. Seemingly, the stallions have some inbreeding, and they're being matched to mares where you know they're it's then a clean pedigree that there's no you know that there's no common ancestors at least in these two, which is interesting. Orfevre, for instance, happens to have Northern Taste, the Canadian Northern Dancer son, 3x4 or 4x3, and Dermis Odagaki has got Deputy Minister as well,
right?
4x5. Well, I do see Hail to Reason. I do see Hail to Reason is buried, you know, 5x5. But anyway, the concept. I want to see if there's some merit to that, and how you know. I mean, Sid's in close contact with quite a few prominent Japanese breeders, and he can talk about you know what. The philosophy and what has made all this, but as you point out, I mean they, you know, it's not as if Dick that they just started showing up at these races in the last 3 years. They've been taking chances and trying and learning and you know working at it for a long time, and so it's been a you know trust the process. It's been a process.
Yeah. And like with Manya Biscuits, we're all shocked. Oh, geez, 6 furlong, 7 furlong horse is siring a distance horse. But End Sweep went over there. And End Sweep had 30-something two-year-old winners in his first crop in Florida and then got sold to Japan. And I would notice, you know, End Sweep's running in distance races and things like that. So we kind of typecast our horses maybe a little too much, and they seem to be more adventurous. Like when they see End Sweep, they see by a Travis winner out of an Alabama winner. When we see End Sweep, we see a 6 furlong stakes winner. So they just I just think they take more chances than we do, and obviously very successful at it, and they've put money in. I mean, they'll come in November and buy $1 million broodmares.
Yep.
But just they've just been awesome, and now they're going to have a Deep Impact son is being openly talked about by Aiden O'Brien, who doesn't normally do this, as not just an Epsom Derby winner, but as a Triple Crown winner.
That's what I saw that. I read the same thing this morning.
Oh, jeez. Now, that's kind of out of character for Aiden. So, and I know the horse was awesome, Auguste Rodin. And so you had Deep Impact having this huge impact on the breed, and unfortunately he passed away. It's like 17 years old, but Colwell was smart enough to have Galileo Mares be bred to him, and that would have been just unbeatable had they been able to continue that had he lived. But, so you get to see the results of that coming up soon in the 2000 Guineas when August Rodin tries the first leg, but Aiden O'Brien is pretty bullish on that horse, and that's Deep Impact. So you'll see them all over the place.
All right, Dick, let's turn our attention to, we're not at Happy Valley, we're at Sha Tin.
Yes.
Let's take a look. We're about 10 minutes?
Yeah, we're on the dirt. It's an eight race card on either the all weather track or the dirt track. It's listed as wet slow. They had rain, even had rain over the weekend, because shot 10 on Sunday was noticeably slow. The running times were all about a full second slower than normal. So tonight we are at shot 10 on the all weather. No Zach Purton. Zach got sick, took off the rest of his mounts. I haven't been able to keep track of substitute riders. But no Zach. Michael Chang already has a winner on the card, the trainer. He had three on Sunday. So he came out with this treble. And then just missed winning the first race today, won the third race. So he's on a hot streak. And this track is a little slower than normal, even though when it gets wet, sometimes it quickens up. So the first leg, you want me to do the pick three?
Sure, go ahead.
All right, race six kicks off to pick three. This class three handicap going two turns, 1,650 meters, kind of a metric mile. And I like two horses in here. The favorite's going to be number four, Ava Nagila, from Frankie Laura and Sylvester De Sosa. Just form lines, look very, very good. It was a good second a couple weeks ago at shot 10 on the turf. Now it's back here trying all weather. Gets in pretty light with 125 pounds. Draws the rail, and there's been three winners already tonight from barrier one. So Ava Nagila will sit, wait, pull out, make his move. It's a pretty long stretch. So this, when they turn for home, there is time to get going. See if D'Souza can live up to this horse's backing. And then the other horse I'm going to use is number six, Beaver Hunter. This one had two starts on the all-weather, was a real good second back on October 26th, then came back with kind of a dull fourth, finished up last year in December with a better race on the turf at Happy Valley. Now is freshened up, shows up here for Matthew Chadwick, gets in with 122 pounds, draws well. Just think he fits the conditions well, and if I can get 7-1, which he was about an hour ago, I'll take it. So 4-6, very wide open. The favorite is only going to be 4-5-1. So the money is really spread out, which makes it tough. So I'm going to go 4-6-8. The 4 is Manstar. Sylvester D'Souza, again, this horse has won four times on the all-weather. So we like that. He's proven over it. 6, Gummy Gummy. Matthew Chadwick riding for Benno Young. A lot of speed. Got run down in its last start at Happy Valley. Now gets on the all-weather for the first time. And number 8, Youthful Deal. Son of Deep Field, who was in really good form on the all-weather. Then, for some reason, he went to shot 10 for the turf. Didn't run bad, but now back probably to his preferred surface. He draws post 11, but that's not the worst thing at the all-weather track at shot 10, and we will get a rider change because Zach Hurt was listed to ride. So second leg of the pick 3, 4, 6, and 8. And then the final leg, kind of got another wide-open race betting-wise. This is a handicap class 2, so we got horses moving up and down the ladder. The high weight is number 1, Computer Patch from Hugh Bowman. I think he will be tough, but he has to tote the weight. And two horses that do not have to tote the weight is number 11, Goko Win, and number 12, Adios. Adios was the early betting favorite. About an hour ago, we'll see. I'm sure he's going to take even more money. But him from the outside, the two nervous witness draws post 12, one-dimensional speedball. He's going to gun, and how does that affect all the horses to his inside? Does it set up a crazy pace? Does he clear the field? He hasn't been holding on lately. We'll see if the all-weather can help him in that respect. But from post 12, and his form is kind of iffy lately, I'll try to beat them with the 1, 11, and 12. So race 6, kick off with 4 and 6, race first leg 4 and 6, second leg 4, 6, and 8. 8th race, 1, 11, and 12.
Very good. 2 by 3 by 3. Starting in about, what do we got, 8 minutes, 7 minutes?
They're still in the walking ring.
Are they still? All right. Well, it says 8 minutes, but all right. We'll keep an eye on that. Well, then you're going to put us in trouble here, Dick. All right. While we wait for the race, let's get some recapping, and let's look ahead to the weekend.
Well, the schedule still is a little quirky. We're back to Chatin on the normal late Saturday night, early Sunday morning turf racing back at Chatin. But next week, racing resumes at Happy Valley on Thursday, not Wednesday, Thursday, not sure why. And so kind of creaking back to the normal Chatin Happy Valley schedule, except Happy Valley next week will be on Thursday. Got some big stake races coming up, including the Chairman's Trophy and the Chairman's Sprint, both on April 9th. Now, the Sprint is going to have Lucky Swainus and Wellington, two multiple Grade 1 stakes winners. And California Spangle, who I talked about, where does he go since he got beat in that 7 furlong sprint by Lucky Swainus? And they're actually going to go back to a mile with him for the Chairman's Trophy. So I think they've seen enough of Lucky Swainus for a while. And considering his ability to get middle distances, why not? So California Spangle will go to the mile, Chairman's Trophy on April 9th, and Lucky Swainus and Wellington will be in the sprint on the same day at Chatin. That's actually Easter Sunday, April 9th.
So that's right.
That's a week from this Sunday. And that's about it for previews and news and stuff. One quick point, Steve. Last week was a Whirlpool race. The Dubai card was all part of the Whirlpool.
Right.
Which did tremendous numbers. When you're looking at these races, and I know everyone's looking for big box card numbers, but getting 1680 to place on Emblem Road was just a phenomenal price. And there is a way of doing it. It's hard. You can't do it on the phone or anything, but you can go, when a Whirlpool card is being conducted, you can go see all the odds and all the pools and all the races 24 hours on in. So I had already done work Saturday morning looking at odds and stuff. And I see that Emblem Road was a, 8-9-1 in the place pool. And I'm like, gee, I don't know if he's going to win, but I know he's going to be rallying and likes a mile and a quarter. So to get that kind of price, now obviously you're not a $2 better if you're willing to take 1680, but if you want to bet a lot more money, getting that kind of price on his chances of finishing in the top three was huge. But the difference is it's a Whirlpool race, so the money in that pool is just massive. So you're not worried about, like, some foreign races, if you bet 100, 200, you might be in the odds because the racing might not be commingled. But these are all commingled. They did $40-something million U.S. betting on the U.S. dollars on the Whirlpool. And there'll be more coming up, and there might even be some plans to do even more. But it's just something, when they do have a Whirlpool, kind of pay attention, because obviously it's good racing. But the way the betting is conducted gives you a couple of edges that you don't get the rest of the year.
No, point well made. Dick, while we wait as well, you got thoughts about couple of different elements, evaluating the three-year-old players that are coming from Japan. That also includes the Road to the Derby Japan version with this Continuar. I did see a video of his trainer dancing, which I should have retweeted. It looks like he's going to be a media darling based on that video. Then, of course, what you saw out of two fills at Turfway, and I think this is a horse that needs to be taken seriously from Ravelli. Excited for Ravelli and for Jareth Loveberry. Then there's Kings Barnes, who a lot of people are being pretty dismissive of, you know, of the way in which that race was run. And so I'm just curious, what did you make of the three-year-old scene Saturday?
Well, on paper, at this point, it looks like there's going to be some pace in the Derby. I mean, last year the pace was suicidal, but a lot of horses with forward running styles, that's always fun. Todd's kind of under the radar because all the attention has been on the Baffert Barn and who's going to train them and all that commotion.
I think that worm has turned.
Yes. But there's Todd with four horses and legitimate contenders, and he's not under the spotlight. I'm sure he will be by Derby Day, but Todd's showing up with a strong hand, and I don't get involved in the future stuff just for various reasons. It can give you a hedge if you can get the right horse at a price that then gets hot. The one hedge I had was with High Fly. I think it was High Fly in the Derby, and I had him at 100-1, which, you know, didn't matter. He didn't win, but it enabled me to hedge on a bunch of other horses, and I screwed it up. But that was the Giacomo won, and it looked like it, for a long time in that race, it looked like Closing Argument was going to win the contender at 130-1. So that was obviously a perfect hedge opportunity. But I don't know. Future betting is good. It maintains interest. What do they have now? 40 horses available?
Cinnamon.
I know they've increased it. So it's just fun to follow, fun to watch. But no strong opinions, because I kind of, what I try to do is like resist having strong opinions, because the Derby's not being run the first Saturday of April. It's being run
first
Saturday of May.
Exactly.
So it never seems to work out when you get so bent on one thing, and then they're living, breathing animals, and hopefully they all stay healthy and sound, and we have a good race.
Well, it's a point well made that that we still have got, you know, these two races Saturday, Florida and Arkansas, and then the Bluegrass and the Santa Anita Derby. I mean, there's a long way to go here, and there's literally as many as, I don't know, eight to ten horses that could morph into this field. And you know, Andy yesterday brought up, and Jay Pridman for years has also said, you know, don't run the Derby in your mind. Now you're going to run the Derby, in your mind when the PPs are established, or at least when, a week out or so, when we've got a real handle on the 20 that are going to go. And all you got to do, there's now two versions of the Derby in recent memory over the last 20 years, 21 years. Because I'm going to bring up 2002, to remember that you do yourself a little bit of a disservice in this race, looking, you know, as much as we look forward to it, having an established preconception, because the only people that recognized that there was a potential for War Emblem to wire that 2002 Derby were the ones that recognized that Buddha was no longer in the field, and there wasn't going to be anybody to to run along with War Emblem suddenly. There suddenly was an uncontested lead. And because I'll never forget my barbecue partner, Barry Fry, turning to me on the backstretch and saying, "Can this horse wire?" I said, "He's going to." I said, "This is..." It became obvious. Like, I winced. Like, oh my God, Baffert's going to wire this field. And similarly, last year, until Rich Strike made it into the field, all we talked about was the potential for a collapse. And, you know, if you had had 2-3 weeks to consider Rich Strike, who had been so good at Churchill and who was going to be his, you know, who was going to be closing, you know, maybe some people, not as a win candidate maybe, but some people might have recognized, you know, this horse could definitely clunk up for something, for a piece, and, you know, you would have been cognizant. So just remember, that's not the field. We're just about set. Here we go.
The best part of a length and a half. Going forward here. Sky Supreme as per normal. Beauty Champ is in the firing line, and Romantic Combo deep into the first turn for Wagner Borges, followed by Havana Nagila down on the inside. He's going to end up in the perfect spot behind the leader. Then came Maldives, followed by Yes We Can. He's three horses back over on the inside. Royal Bomb from So We Joy, Bear Slam and Viva Hunter last of all. Out towards the 1200 they run, and Sky Supreme in 28.29, so a little outside standard. He leads over Beauty Champ, who's a little keen on the outside. Havana Nagila box seating third, and fourth is Romantic Combo. Next then came Maldives from So We Joy, midfield over on the rail. Next then came Royal Bomb as they passed the 850. So We Joy, Bear Slam and Viva Hunter. He's still last at about 9 or 10 off the leader. Who is Sky Supreme for Angus Chung at the 700 metres? He leads over Beauty Champ, and Havana Nagila, the favourite, stalks them everywhere. 2.5 to Maldives. Romantic Combo, he's flat coming down the side. Royal Bomb three out. Then came Yes We Can, So We Joy. Further back, Bear Slam and last Viva Hunter on the fence as they swing at the 400 metres. Sky Supreme is all out, but Havana Nagila, he's cruised up on the outside for D'Souza. Maldives, and then came Yes We Can, So We Joy, Viva Hunter and Royal Bomb out wider. But at the 150, it is Havana Nagila in front. He shows out 2.5 and he's clear here. He's going on to score. Let us rejoice and do a little dance. It's Havana Nagila. Three links in advance of either Maldives or Yes We Can. Next in was So We Joy from Viva Hunter, Sky Supreme, Beauty Champ. Then came Royal Bomb, Romantic Combo. He was about the first.
Well, there it is. And Havana Nagila just basically just stuck to the leader and drew off. And you can lift up the chairs and dance gloriously. Havana Nagila. Havana Nagila.
That was super impressive.
Yeah, it was.
He got to the lead, and then he just, boom, just exploded.
They really did.
So that was very, very good. Then the money showed. He went off even money. So.
All right, so we're one for he one. Was, I bet you're pick three, Dick, so I'm on board.
Good.
All right, so 4-6-8. 4-6-8 with the 1-11-12. I got Mike Welch here, so sit back, listen to a couple of thoughts from. Hold on, Mike. Wait a minute. Don't jump on me.
Oh.
That's all right. Or you can use the headset if you want.
Nah.
You like the stick, Mike? All right. So, Dick, you want to sit in with Mike?
I'll just say hello. I gotta get going.
That
hey, Dick.
And Mike says
hey,
hello.
Mike, how are you? Look forward to seeing you up here in Saratoga.
Do you hear me?
Yeah, no, he said, look forward to seeing you in Saratoga.
Oh, I'm looking forward to be there. You can't wait.
Dick, I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week, and I'll be in Kentucky.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
Dick Powell, everybody, HKJC. You want PPs?
Nah, just checking.
There you go.
I don't know what you're going to ask me, so.
I don't know what I'm going to ask you either.
Better have a set available.
The first question is, how was the Bake Shack cinnamon roll?
It was delicious. There's still some of it left. I'm kind of going to nurse it.
I
try to avoid these things in the morning. You're poisoned when you're around. I can tell you that. It's not good for anybody's diet.
Well, you're going to have a strong run because I'm here all week, and then when we get to Kentucky, you're going to also, you're going to also.
Nah, I got to fight the boys up in the booth there, Big John and the other John, both Clocker Johns. They make a good beeline for that. Box of donuts as well. So
yeah, it's my tradition to somehow. I don't know if I inherited the title. Was there somebody else that used to?
You bring free donuts once, everybody expects them. You know
exactly right.
You are the most popular guy around. I can tell you that at least up there in the mornings.
But
it's a long morning. People don't realize how long those guys are up there, and you get hungry.
Yeah.
You're out there at 5 o'clock, and you don't get out till 10:30 on turf days. It's a long morning. Same here too on
Take the whole thing. Don't do that.
On the days we are doing Tapita works, it's a long morning.
So. Herbie stopping by with the coffee he brings me every morning, which I appreciate. our spot, again, I'm going to reiterate because the place is unbelievable. I discovered it literally when
we
opened.
Where is it? I don't even know where it is.
You know where Jackson's is.
Yeah.
And then there's that IHOP across the street at Sterling and Federal, right?
Right.
It's right next to the Obsidian, the Armenian carpet.
It's a little out of my way. I don't usually get up that
Dania
way
Beach.
Too often. Yeah, it's on the way. If I was going to Hailai, I would stop there.
Now you're talking.
I don't even know if they have that there anymore.
They don't. But the building's still there, and Paolo's is still across the street. Bake Shack. Flew out. I flew Tina in for Saturday night. I had boned my points. So I flew her in because I'm staying at my cousin's in Boca, and it's just too nice for her not to, to miss the chance. So she came in, got a little sun, and taking her to the airport Sunday, needed a bite to eat, but wanted it to be quick. And they're open till 3 o'clock, Bake Shack. And it's breakfast, and they do have lunch. It's more of a breakfasty, donut-y, baked goods, but their lunch. Tina had a buffalo chicken sandwich. I should put the picture. Unbelievable fries. I had tuna on a pretzel bun. Out of this world. The lunch. I think I've had the lunch one other time. But they do these great breakfast wraps, bacon, sausage, or ham. But the baked goods are just gorgeous.
And I got to tell you, it's a lot cheaper than having lunch at Jackson's across the street. You need to hit the pick three to afford the hamburgers and French fries. Although the food is terrific. The ice cream is tremendous.
Great.
Unfortunately, when it gets really warm around here, which it's been most of the time, but the lines to get an ice cream cone. It's like me trying to wait for to play golf in the wintertime here. It just takes too long.
Jackson's is fabulous, and I may actually make a
and
Jackson's
Grandpa's
stop.
Is over there too, so
haven't
it's a pretty good
to
area.
Grandpa's as much as I used to. We used to go to Grandpa's. They bring Grandpa's is funny. They bring that when you sit down, they bring you that little plate of mini Danish. Which is nice, a little.
It's so good. I mean, it made diners, drive-ins, and dives and drive-ins.
Oh, did Grandpa's did?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I think it's under new ownership now, but I'm not sure. I haven't been there in a while, but I believe it's under new ownership now.
Well, my go-to at Jackson's eating is the turkey Reuben, the Rachel. Terrific.
The burgers are good. I mean, they're tremendous, and the fries are tremendous. They just cost you about $30.
Nice onion rings.
And the onion rings, yes.
Onion rings are top-notch, without a doubt. And what's your ice cream flavor of choice?
I haven't been in a while, so it's hard for me to say what I got there the last time. I like coffee, or some kind of a coffee-chocolate mix,
well,
if I can.
Well, I'm going to do my treatise, Adam Coglanese. New Englanders, you know that New Englanders eat more coffee ice cream than any. 70% of the coffee ice cream eaten in America is eaten by New Englanders. It's unbelievable. It's an amazing
thing. Crazy.
Well, I learned all this from when I was with Dan and Yogurt, and we had the coffee, the coffee flavored Dan and Yogurt. And New England coffee ice cream in New England is just
I like coffee with a little chocolate chips in it.
Mocha chip. Now you're talking. Well, yeah. And of course, how many people you know from Rhode Island?
A lot.
What are they? What's the crazy? Yeah,
I don't pull them on. Ice creams.
Well, not just ice cream. They got the coffee milk. In every diner, in every joint in Rhode Island, they take the Autocrat coffee syrup and milk. Coffee milk is a thing, a huge thing in Rhode Island.
Didn't know that.
Absolutely. And a cabinet? You've had a cabinet.
No.
Cabinet is a milkshake in Rhode Island.
No. I haven't been in Rhode Island. It's been a long time. Since I think the last time was at Lincoln Downs might be the last
time
I was in Rhode
Island. At Gansett.
And Gansett, yeah.
You covered both?
I covered both, yes. Long trips from Boston to the night cards at Lincoln and Gansett get back around 1 in the morning, but or on days when it snowed. To try to get the Lincoln Downs. There were days when it did not snow at Lincoln, but it had snowed in the Boston area. So Lincoln was running. There was a Thanksgiving Day card that they canceled at Suffolk that day, but they were running in Lincoln. Lincoln ran, so I was working at Lincoln, and I had to make the drive to Lincoln. And it was Thoroughbreds. They both ran on Thanksgiving that year, and it was a or was it Easter? No, I think it was Thanksgiving. But it snowed, and not a lot. Not a lot in Boston. I mean, not a lot in Rhode Island,
yeah.
But in Boston, which is a little further up, it snowed, and the roads were terrible. It was a long trip. By the time I came back, it left there, but they ran the whole car to Lincoln, and it was a little better going home, but it was a long journey. I had a lot of those, too, from Rockingham, working at Suffolk. I lived up near Rockingham and trying to make it into Boston on days where sometimes it didn't snow till after the races started. By the time you got out to try to get back to Rockingham, to back home to New Hampshire, it was a nightmare.
Somebody sent me, speaking of sad nightmares, somebody sent me a picture. I forget who sent it to me. Demolition of the barn area.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
I think right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We should probably talk about what's going on here, though. I think people are tired of listening about food and...
No, they never get tired of food.
They need Mike Mayo. You got to get Mike Mayo on here for that. The Galloping Gourmet is who you need on here. I'm hearing they're off the grass. I haven't gotten any official word yet, but the word this morning through the outriders during the training was that it was off the grass. But the official announcement that I usually get through the racing office has not come out yet, so... I'm not going to say anything other than it sounds like they'll be off the turf.
Well,
it was pretty wet here this morning when we opened up.
There were
the track is fast, though. The main track was fast by the time we got after the first break, so it'll be fast today. There's no more rain scheduled today. I think there is some rain in the forecast the next day or two.
Mike, set us up for Saturday, and first of all, when do you expect to have the clocker report out?
I hope to have it by late Thursday afternoon for Saturday. Mike's working on his stuff for Saturday now. Dave Norton's usually in pretty early. My stuff is already in the computer. I just have to go over it and update some of the works to the last few days or within the last week. But other than that, we should be good by Thursday afternoon.
And Mike, just to show you how invaluable this is, I've got my man Steve Carlin saying, "Tell him about Flakowitz up in Delray or Benz." Rich Migliore says, "You're making me hungry." My man Aaron Yagoda wants to know when I was with Dan and Yogurt, and I can't believe you've heard me mention Aaron that I was with Dan Freddie Moe, the great Freddie Moe, is saying Dominic's in Boca for pizza and good
that
dinner.
I haven't been to. Flakowitz I've been to many times. That's usually
Boston,
the go.
That's a Boston.
That's the go-to spot for breakfast after covering workouts at Palmetto's when you go there. So
I'll tell you something interesting about Flakowitz. They bought my grandfather's recipes from the Mayflower Bake Shop.
Really? Wow! Yes. Wow! Their pastries are delicious.
Right next. Great neck.
Yeah, on
Little Neck. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for years and years and years. And before that, they were on Jerome Avenue in the Bronx.
Steve Scrucci owns a piece of
Lakewood. Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
How about that?
Wow.
The information you get here, information you can get
useless
nowhere
information
else.
That, right. People don't want that information.
All right, so
they want to know who's going to win the double Saturday.
But you're
or whatever.
You're very secretive, though. That's Dubai, I think.
Okay, I'm looking for your PPs for the Florida Derby in case you ask me anything about it, and they're not here.
They're here. Hold on. You're looking in the wrong direction. You're going.
I'm going from 1 down to 14, and it stops at 13.
Right, there's the Oaks. And here's the Derby. There you go.
Okay. I should know these all by heart by now anyway.
I'm going to ask you before we get to Derby. I want to talk Oaks for a second. You know, everybody's saying, oh, it's a mystery and this and that, and we're looking maybe wet paint, and doesn't she have to get faster and so forth. And we talked yesterday with Norm Cassie about South Lawn. Are people glossing over the viability of Dorth Vader?
I think they probably are. I think they're looking at that as a flukish occurrence. And, you know, you can look at it two ways. I will say that she got the premier trip that day because the track was definitely favoring the outside. We know the horse on the rail, the favorite, just packed it in after 6 furlongs. Rusty Arnold, undefeated horse. Dorth Vader, great ride by Miguel Vasquez, keeping her outside, rating her off the pace. But... you know, like we had talked before, she worked tremendous going into the race, and she worked just as good coming out. I mean, her one work since since the Devona Dale, March 23rd, it was a 5 ace. I think I had 58 and 4. It's 59 in the paper. Officially, I think I might have 58 and 95, and the clockers had 59.02 or something like that. But it looked just as good coming out of the race. She's got that outside post again, which has got to be in her favor. Will she bounce? Possible. I mean, you look at from the 85 she ran in the sandpipe, and she went to a 52 in the Gasparilla, but she was in a big speed duel the day of the Gasparilla. I'm sure they're going to sit her off just like they did last time. You've got Miracle for Todd coming in off a huge effort, and with the speed, I'm going to guess they're going to sit off it with Dark Beta, but they won't be too far back. She's pretty quick herself.
I think she's okay. And then when I saw the figures, I realized this filly is going to get potentially, you know, I think Yates is waiting to see about this trip, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was really excited after the last one, you know, looking forward to hopefully getting this filly to the Oaks. It would be huge for him and the connections, John Ropes, the owner breeder. But you got to get through the two-turn question first. And, you know, Miracle's not going to be easy to beat. In fact, Miracle is probably going to be the favorite with Irad up for Todd, Darth Vader, maybe the second choice in here. The only thing I can say for certain is she's not going to be 46-1 this time.
Exactly. All right, I just wanted to touch on that. That gets us to this surprise field. Mike, I saw some quotes from a couple different people. Well, we had Todd yesterday, and I also saw quotes from Danny Gargan, who is weighing taking W&L to New York, to the Wood.
But the last I talked to him, that was not going to happen.
He thinks some horses are coming out of this field.
He's convinced that some of these owners are not going to run these horses that don't belong in here and waste a race with them. I don't know. You know, I talked to Safi on Sunday. He's got four of them, obviously a couple that really don't seem to belong. And at that point, that was Sunday, they were committed to running all four. There's a long way between last Sunday and this Saturday. You know, there's a couple of others in here that really shouldn't be in the race, but I know that they are going to run. You know, I agree with Todd. It's a shame that, and look, people are taking it from Todd as sour grapes that are making pre-excuses for the horse. It's not that. He's just saying that I'd rather not be in post 11. I didn't expect we'd have this big a field. Not that it probably would have changed his mind if he knew 12 was going in here. He still was going to go in this race. This horse doesn't have to win the Florida Derby to still be the favorite for the Kentucky Derby if he runs work a trip out in here. So it's probably all to his advantage. You know, would they like to win? Of course they like to win. It's Mike Rapoli and St. Elias, you know. I mean, they want to run and win every race they're in. And every owner wants to win every race they're in. But it is a step toward their major goal, which is the Kentucky Derby. He's still the best horse in here on paper. But a lot can happen, and that's the thing. You know, you don't want some horses that don't belong eliminating you from possibility of winning. You know, in that first turn could be chaos with 12 horses. A lot of speed inside of them. I know he wants to take them back, obviously, and probably keep him outside, but now instead of being, you know, three wide or four wide, you might be six wide in the first turn. He'll get a good sheet number, but at the end of the day, that's not what you're looking for here. You're looking to, you know, to win a grade one a race that's a stallion maker, too.
Yeah.
You know, in case this horse doesn't go on,
something could go, he could get hurt between now and Derby.
You win the Florida Derby, it's a stallion maker for your career in breeding.
And his resume is pretty solid to this point anyway.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. So, but I understand where Todd's coming from. I understand where all these guys that, you know, now are in 9, 10, 11, and 12, when they, at worst, thought, you know, maybe 9 would be the widest they'd get. That's what Danny told me. He said, you know, I didn't mind being outside. I almost preferred to be outside, but I thought outside meant 9.
Not 12.
So, I mean, the one thing for him is that, you know, the horse he's got to beat is not much better off post position-wise than him, Forte. But Danny actually, you know, he'd be very happy to run second and third here, get this horse into the Derby. That's his goal here.
Right.
He knows it's a formidable task to beat Forte at this time in this race. But he said, let me get in the Derby with this horse, and then we'll take our chances against Forte in a 20-horse field. You know, it might give us a better opportunity. This horse needs to run well, though. I mean, you look at his I looked at the sheet numbers last night. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. He's got three double-digit sheet numbers on the Thoroughgraph, and he's got a 1 for the Remsen. So, and maybe that one kind of knocked him out a little bit. That's why they had to give him all that time off. I mean, it was a big effort, but it also came in the slop. So you have to consider the fact that maybe this horse is just better on a wet track than a dirt track. But I mean, a dry track. I mean, both his wins actually are on wet tracks. So that's something to consider too.
Mike Welch, everybody, and we'll obviously do a full-fledged attack on the card on Friday. Any other parts of the card that, as you've done your early work, that kind of grabbed you? And that you think
I'm still going over the stuff now. Like I said, I just finished entering my workouts that I've seen here, but I haven't seen Mike Vesey's or Dave Norton's yet, and those are keys. There's so many horses coming down from Palmetto's and Palm Beach Downs. I mean, it could be just a ridiculously huge day for Todd here. There's a couple of maiden races on the turf that look interesting. That I've seen a few of them, but none of the ones that I've seen here, I'm really thrilled with. So,
well, I can tell you yesterday when I was talking to him about his maidens around that are floating all over. When we got to Spansiv, the Caracanti, in the opener, he said of the maidens we've talked about, she's the one that he thought would be the most likely successful.
Yeah, and David entered some of the works for this horse. He hadn't entered the turf work in yet, so I haven't had a chance to look at it. I haven't had a chance to go over to XBTV and see which of these works in film to get a good look at them. But I mean, she's definitely one of the question marks in here. That's the problem with these races. There's so many question marks in these fields between the breeding. And when you get all these first-time starters and you get horses that you haven't seen a lot of from big-name outfits, and it makes for interesting wagering, potential for big prices, and that's what most people want. They want to have that chance to make a big score, and these races are ripe for that, especially the Tapita races, even more so, I find, are even more
inscrutable.
Inscrutable. That's what I was going to say, crapshoot, but inscrutable is probably the right word. And there's one of those, too. I think the second race is on the Tapita. It doesn't look like the strongest field in the world. It was almost a race I'd look for a first-time starter. Dale Romans has a first-timer, but she's on the rail, and she's never been on Tapita. So the horse has some speed, has some ability, but that's a tough spot to be on the Tapita down on the rail.
And unusual to see Cassie. Not unusual, I guess, but Cassie's got arms.
That horse came over here and worked once over here, but it didn't do much, so it's hard to get a line on that horse. We had one work with that filly.
Interesting. All right, then. And this is a maiden optional.
Right. I mean, on paper, it's a relatively weak-looking field.
You do have the Ghost Zapper, the Grade 3, which will feature some familiar names.
Well, Todd will be 3-5 in there, I believe. Bright Future, isn't that in the Ghost Zapper? Or am I thinking of the Sir Shackleton? Or is that the Sir Shackleton?
That's the Sir Shack.
That's the Sir Shackleton.
Yeah. For the 3-year-olds going, for the 4-year-olds.
Oh, the Ghost Zapper. O'Connor is off the top of my head is the horse
First Captain.
Yeah. Well,
simplification.
First Captain's coming back off a layoff, and it looks the way he's been working to me that he may need this race. He just hasn't sparkled in the morning like I've seen from him in the past. I'm not going to pick him 1, 2, 3. I'm going to go against him and think that maybe he's going to need this race. Simplification is an interesting horse. Obviously a major player on his form and off his last race. He did not work last weekend, and that is not Antonio Sano's style to miss a work with these horses. They go 5 days every week. Once they come out of a race, 2 weeks after a race, they start back and they usually go 5 days. This horse did not work last week. I'm not sure what that means. Maybe they just figured they needed to back off a little bit on him. Is it a red flag? It's a question mark. It's a question I can't answer, but it's not something I would have expected to see. So how that factors into anybody's handicap into the race, you're going to have to decide that. All I can tell you is he did not work last Saturday. He worked the Saturday before, and he was okay, but nothing last week.
Mike Welch, everybody, will be together on Friday and do the serious selection portion of the... And
unfortunately, only one of us will have a team in the Frozen Four this weekend.
Oh, you motherfucker. Congratulations. Who'd they draw? I didn't even see the finals.
I think they play Minnesota, which is not going to be an easy easy task. But then, once you get to the Final Four, none of them... One thing about hockey, especially college hockey, You know, it's just, you could, these teams are so well matched, and it's just a matter of a puck bounce here and a puck bounce there. You got to get the lucky breaks, and it's probably going to be decided by that. So, but at least I'll have a route for the old alma mater. Back when I was there in the days I was at BU, I mean, they were the best team in the country. They were a powerhouse.
Yes, they were.
And I kind of had a rivalry with the hockey team because I roomed with some of the guys on the basketball team. And there was a big rivalry during the intramural for football and baseball during the spring and the fall. And a lot of the years it would come down to, you know, the basketball team and the hockey team. And there was some tense moments out there, especially on the football field with our flag football. So, but that's another story for another day.
Well, good luck.